Wars don't just reshape borders, they reshape economies. In February 28, 2026, tensions in the Middle East escalated dramatically. Missile strikes, attacks on oil infrastructure, and threats to close the Strait of Hormuz sent shockwaves through the global market. Within days, oil prices surged past $100 per barrel, shipping insurances skyrocketed, and governments around the world began releasing emergency oil reserves. Today, we're going to be talking about how a regional conflict can send economic shockwaves across the entire global economy. My name is Rehan.
And my name is Sasha.
And welcome to the third episode of Capital and Consequence. Sasha, are you excited today? We're going to be talking about Iran and...
This is a very important episode.
And how Iran and how that war could potentially disrupt our global economy.
Exactly.
How it can contribute to the cost of living that we were talking about last episode.
Exactly.
And if you haven't checked out the last episode, be sure to check that out.
Of course.
It was a very, very fun episode. A couple heated arguments, but it was a great episode. And just for the viewers, I think we should set this in context, which is what's going on right now? Like, why is there a war in Iran?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure if even the US know why they've started the war in Iran.
Exactly.
But on 28th of February 2026, after joint US-Israeli military strikes on Iran targeting military and nuclear facilities, they were like strikes that were aimed at weakening Iran's military capabilities and nuclear infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it also killed Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, who was the head of the Iranian regime. Now, I think 4 days ago, we just got confirmation that the new Ayatollah would be Mojtaba Khamenei, who is Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's son, which goes against what like the Iranian regime is clearly showing to the US that they don't want to listen to them. And despite the US's calls for the Iranian regime making sure their leader is like one that that the US accepts, they clearly have not listened to that and have gone on to something else.
Hmm.
So what do you think about the new appointment of the Iranian regime and their leader?
Well, when looking at it at face value, it's a bit, in my opinion, hypocritical.
Mm.
Because the state or the current regime which Iran is tried to overthrow and enacted the Muslim state it is now with Khomeini at its head. The whole goal for the new regime was to overthrow the monarchy, the Shah. And I feel like it's a bit hypocritical because now the regime looks a lot like a monarchy with the children of the leader getting the rule, and there's no real except the heritage of the ruler. Only the heritage of the blood being the rule. So I find it a bit hypocritical, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I feel like slightly differently. Like they are being a bit hypocritical, but like they are trying to show the US that they don't want, and Israel for that matter, that they're not going to listen to them, and they're not going to let them boss the Iranian regime around. And now, I mean, Trump has been calling for so many different things that we don't even know what he's really asking for. So Trump said that they're doing it to stop the nuclear threats that the Iranian regime are creating, the nuclear weapons. So we're almost confused because he also says that they're trying to overthrow the Ayatollah and the Iranian regime as a whole and trying to get the people to do that for the US, to overthrow the Iranian regime and set up their own sort of democracy. And now the question is, do you think the Iranian regime should just create a democracy right now? Should they immediately just go straight into a democracy? What do you think about it?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, really.
Yes.
Because if they do go into democracy, as you mentioned, they will get appeased, the American, but
will they really? Because again, we don't know what
exactly
the Americans want.
That's a good point. But also, where it's not really Iran's type of view of America and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one of the most stunning things I heard about the Iran American war, the way we call it, maybe it's the Iran-Israel war, is that the current regime, you know, asked for the death of American Israel.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe the Iranians, especially the current regime now, want to appease the Americans, but rather they want to oppose them. And with the current things which the new supreme leader is doing right now, it's quite obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I do think that, yeah, the Iranian regime. And also the question is, if they go into a democracy immediately, well, I mean, the voters, for example, are they 100% sure that the Iranian, that this new democracy is going to be 100% fair? Because we never really know about that. And like, we don't really know what the Iranian regime wants, if that makes sense. We don't know what the Americans want. We don't know what they want. And I don't think that their best course of action would be to switch to a democracy immediately. Yeah. So let's get into our first kind of subsection
of how the economy will be affected.
And I was thinking about let's talk about oil prices and oil disruptions. So before the escalation, the Brent crude oil prices were about $75 to $80 per barrel, and after the war has escalated, there was an immediate spike to around $85 to $90 US dollars per barrel. And then it surged past $100 per barrel. And at the peak of tensions, it briefly reached the amount of around $114 per barrel, which is a 40 to 50% increase compared to the earlier 2025 prices. So with estimates that if the war continues, it might reach to $130 to $140 per barrel. So yeah, what do you think about that?
So analysts believe that if this war continues, oil prices will reach $130. They also mentioned, and this is my source from a highly accredited financial analyst, and they also talked about how if it continues at $130 per barrel, it could trigger a recession.
Wow.
And this is highly distressing because, as the new Khomeini said, the new Ayatollah, I call him the new Khomeini, sorry. the he new Khomeini. Vows to keep blocking the Strait of Hormuz in the first statement released by the regime. And it is frightening because, as we've seen in 2022, about 20% of global petroleum consumption comes from oil. That's about 20 million barrels of oil per day passes through the Strait of Hormuz, which is about 20%, as I mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
If this closes, as he said, it would be awfully destructive to our economy. And analysts just don't understand how big of a thing it could be. But I will give you an example. When the Russia-Ukraine war started, prices were around $120. During this war, prices already rose 36%, and they have briefly exceeded $119 per barrel. Financial analysts warn if prices continue as the way they're going, to $130, it will trigger a recession, and that is heavily worrying.
And yeah, the Gulf produces around 10 million barrels per day, which is around like 10% of the global oil demand. And so far, around 15 million barrels per day of oil shipments were disrupted because of this war, according to The Guardian. And so to stabilize the markets, the International Energy Agency has had to release 400 million barrels of emergency oil reserves, which is the largest release ever. For record, previous comparison, which was again in the Russia-Ukraine war, was around half that size. So, like, we're almost at a position where the oil prices are increasing, and people think, oh no, that's just limited to our petrol or fuel for taking up for filling up our car. Because sure, now filling up a car feels like taking out a small loan, but people don't actually recognize the full problem of this, which is that oil is used in so many different things in our general lives. For example, take your, like, I'm going to use the same example as last episode, which is the bakery one, which is that bakery to make the bread that uses some energy, then to transfer the bread to transfer the wheat from the farm to the bakery, make the bread that uses energy, and then all of that additional prices get charged onto the consumer, not to the bakery. And therefore, while you were initially paying £2 for a loaf of bread, you're now paying £3.50. And it's just that sudden snap that we suddenly realize how bad these oil prices have increased and how much damage it does to us.
And oil will not only affect, as you said, transport, which you are very right. It also affects actually inflation, which we talked about previously, but I also just highlight the new statistics which have come up.
Yeah, we love statistics.
We love our statistics. European gas prices already rose about 60%.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, the brilliant example of the bakery, inflation is supply and demand. And if oil will not only reduce agricultural production because, for example, taxes require oil, it will reduce not every single service we require. For example, food or many other services. These will be inflated prices because of because 20% of all oil passes through the Strait of Hormuz.
Mm-hmm.
And this blockade by the current Iranian regime will really hit not only in inflation, but the average person's purchasing power.
Yeah, and I think now is a good position to talk about renewable energy. And it's a good argument to have right now, because after the Russia-Ukraine war started, Britain started diversifying its oil and where they bought oil. So instead of just buying it from Russia, I think it was, they started buying it from the Middle East. But now, because of this war has shown how tensions increase, there might almost be a claim that renewable energy is something to invest in right now. Because while we may not be able to control another country's oil and their oil affairs and the foreign affairs that are going down around in that area, we definitely can control the amount of solar panels we're creating, windmills and windmills, yeah, and we know that our natural resources are much more reliable than the fossil fuels that we'd have to get. And I think that's something environmentalists would love to bring in. So what are your opinions on this?
I'm very glad that the UK is diversifying its energy portfolio, where it's getting more from renewables like solar, especially wind. And I feel like we will be one of the least affected countries from oil, but we'll still be affected.
Do you think so? I don't think that's true.
No.
I think that's just incorrect.
No, because we still have more. Because if, for example, we were more reliant on oil and gas, we have around 20% or 20 to 40% of all energy comes from oil gas. That's much less considering other countries where it's much more. So I think you are wrong in the way where heating homes will probably see a rise, but not to the extent of other countries like, for example, America or especially Europe.
Yeah,
but maybe. It will still be a hit.
I think, agreeing. Like, you're right. I do think, I just checked it up, and the UK, 30%. Of its energy comes from wind energy, and then around 13% comes from nuclear energy. So renewables now produce 40% of UK's electricity. But the key thing to point in there is that the UK has a huge wind energy potential because the UK is one of the global leaders in offshore wind power, and the UK has the largest offshore wind capacity in Europe. And so what we can do is adding more windmills, adding more renewable, to get more renewable energy, and that would be both benefiting the climate but also making the UK a little bit more self-sufficient. So what do you think about that, Sasha?
I fully agree with you there, where the UK is much more self-sufficient in its energy production. But I would just like to highlight where we are safe in the terms of energy production, but we're not probably going to have most of our things we purchase, for example, have large amounts of inflation. Not only, as I mentioned before, the supply and demand of it, but also because most of our manufactured goods come from, for example, China, Japan.
Mm-hmm. And you know something shocking? The UK is like the 10th.
I know.
Highest in manufacturing. I did not know that. And made in UK.
Exactly. And so, as mentioned before, China, Japan, India, South Korea, these are where we import most of our goods we purchase. And they receive about 89% of oil through the Hormuz Strait.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have higher prices to buy the oil, the prices will be pushed onto the consumer. So most of the people living in the UK will have the prices a hit, especially and because of we now have lots of most of our companies outsource labor to Asia. We as the consumer will have a price pushed down to us because of the Strait of the Hormuz. And Iran's biggest weapon is the Strait of Hormuz and oil production. So in being the devil advocate here, they are using it effectively in trying to cut the global supply chain, but yeah. I don't believe they'll win it.
But also the other thing that I think Iran have done quite smartly is sending like the missiles immediately after they were attacked to the other let's say Middle Eastern countries, because that put pressure on those other Middle Eastern countries, because initially they were like almost neutral, they were trying to stay out of it, they didn't want the war to come to them, but now Iran has actively brought the war to them. And it's almost putting pressure on America to stop the war. You know what? I just realized something. Guess why Trump hates renewable energy so much?
Why?
Because he can't sanction the wind.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But talking about Trump, I also researched and I realized that there are some winners from this war.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The US, Russia, and other oil producers, because of the rise in oil prices, they will benefit massively because of how much oil is costing now. And they will have increased revenue. For example, Russia is a big winner from this.
Yeah, the US have dropped their sanctions on Russia.
And exactly. Oh, yeah. So not only that, well, I think we may go do it more in depth in a bigger episode on how the US is trying to change its economic policy. But these large oil producers will benefit massively from this.
The other really interesting thing to look at is that China imports a lot of its oil from the Middle East.
Yeah, and
from
the Strait of Hormuz.
And they've almost, the US are almost bringing inflation onto China.
Mm.
So that's definitely something to look out for and something that might be interesting. Now, the next thing I want to talk about are food prices and agriculture and that area. So energy shocks affect agriculture incredibly, like they affect it a lot. And the three main reasons are due to the fertilizer production, the transport costs, and the agricultural machinery. We've already touched on them, but I want to go a bit more in depth into the fertilizer production, because fertilizer production relies a lot on natural gas. And natural gas is used to produce ammonia, which is the key ingredient in nitrogen fertilizers. So when gas prices rise, fertilizer production becomes more expensive, and therefore fertilizer prices rise. And that means a lot can happen. So for example, ammonia fertilizer prices rose by about 30 to 40% after the conflict began. And many people don't really know about this, but the effects of the Iran war can threaten the third major risk to global food security in 6 years, according to The Guardian.
Yeah, and I had some, I watched shipping how the shipping containers.
You watched shipping?
Exactly, yeah. I watched.
That must have been a boring experience.
Yeah, exactly. Shipping containers, how they pass through the Strait of Hormuz. And after the war started, there's nearly around, I think, 90% decrease or nearly 100% decrease of shipping containers stopping.
Yeah.
And not passing through this key point for international trade. Yeah. And it's a way where not only where Trump is causing a mass prices onto its consumers, but more surprisingly, which I found so shocking, is that so normally shipping containers buy insurance to have not only protection, but to insure the goods they're transporting. And war risk insurance premiums have rose over 1,000% for ships in the region. And now, some ships have to pay up to £7.5 million per voyage only in insurance. And these are all these costs bundled up together into more costs for the average consumer.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you just saw, but the new Khamenei, the new Ayatollah, just said that he vowed, in fact, to keep blocking the Strait of Hormuz in his first statement released by the regime. So they are going to keep doing this. They're going to stop. They're going to continue blocking the ships to move. And what do you think is the ultimate motive behind that? Do you think it's to put pressure on the US to stop the war and Israel? Or do you think it's to get allies like China, maybe India, to help Iran so that their prices don't increase a lot?
I agree with you where it creates allies because... Yeah,
but it'll put pressure on the US for definitely.
That's true, yes. But I don't think it will create allies because not only will China not be happy about this, China is already aligned with Iran in the during the UN speech and the UN security conference, where the delegate for Iran talks about how Russia, China, and I think some other countries supported Iran. So we already see where China's aligning with its BRICS and countries which have more allegiances to the China and Russia, but 100% I agree with you where it's a strategic choice of trying to not only try to put pressure on the United States, but try to put pressure on other European countries who rely on this oil so much.
And the other thing that that wars can do is that they can cause uncertainty in the financial markets.
Yep.
And that creates volatility in the stock market. So, for example, after the escalation, S&P 500 and FTSE... fell several percent. And that's because investors fear higher inflation, lower economic growth, supply chain disruptions, and that all adds to it.
Yeah.
But the key thing to note is that the energy companies experienced the complete opposite, where the stock prices rose 10 to 20% in some cases.
Talking on the stock market, I just want to talk about the Dow and Jones Industrial Average. Let me explain it first before I say what happened. It is a index that tracks the performance of 30 large publicly traded companies listed on the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ.
Mm-hmm.
And it was created in 1896. And it's one of the oldest and most closely watched equity benchmarks where stock traders and financial analysts watch to see how the world is affecting this. And it's a great way to understand how the global economy is feeling. During the start of the war, it dropped nearly 600 points.
Wow.
In one day. And analysts at the time state it could create stagflation, high inflation, slow growth in many of the Western countries if this war continues. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, not only in my opinion, where Trump is kind of putting on hard economic backgrounds for all European countries, because not now, they will probably kind of have a smaller impact reminiscent of the Ukraine war, with very high inflation and very slow growth.
Mm-hmm. And higher energy prices also reduce economic growth as well. And it's quite simple, actually. Basically, when households spend more money on fuel and energy, they have less money to spend on other goods and services. And businesses also face higher costs for the electricity, transportation, raw materials, which reduces production or delays expansion. And then finally, there's also lower investment because of the uncertainty. And that just all adds to the market and to the growth.
And there's so much dependence on, as we talked about so long, with, you know, 20% of all global consumption comes from the Strait of Hormuz. And it's such an important route where about £500 billion per year. Mm-hmm. It's valued around that sort of number. And the more we keep on this war, the more countries will have difficulty with trying to keep inflation low and try to keep growth up. So I'm curious to see how countries try to battle it. But I've seen already with the G7 conference trying to talk about if they want to release oil reserves. That is a great idea for trying to resolve this issue.
Yeah. So to conclude, the war involving Iran just shows how interconnected the global economy really is. And a conflict in one region can quickly disrupt oil supplies, push up energy prices, increase inflation, and slow economic growth around the world.
And I feel like just a tiny point, I feel like this highlights how globally connected we are. Yeah. And how this world of globalization, if one small war in the Middle East can affect every single country's economy and people's lives.
Yeah, and while countries like the UK still might be slightly more protected because of the growing investments in renewable energy, they are, after all, still connected to the global market and therefore still affected by these rising costs and economic uncertainty. So in the end, this conflict highlights an important lesson for the global economy, if you think about it.
Exactly.
Energy security matters. And I think that this should be a wake-up call for governments to start investing into renewable energy.
Exactly, yeah.
And the more countries that rely on stable domestic energy sources like renewable, the less vulnerable they are to geopolitical shocks. I'm Rehan.
And I'm Sasha.
And make sure you tune in for the next episode of Capital and Consequences.